The first bills that I would like to take up today are those that have been referred to as the Veterans Home Package, SJR 9, SB 44, and SB 45. Kathy, do you have some additional comments for us? Would you and Paula care to join us at the witness table? And
Mr. Chairman, I'm Kathy Hathaway. I work for Senator Couture. We didn't really have any additional comments unless there were further questions.
Okay. The question I would have, there has been some difference in the fiscal notes. Have you worked with the department to rectify what are varying approaches to the fiscal note?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I saw a draft fiscal note at the end of last week, which was slightly more than Senator Couture would project the cost to be, but it was much more in line with his projections. It was a few, I think it was just a few $100,000 off as far as operating costs.
Mr. Gifford, have we received a fiscal note from the department at this time?
No, I just got off the phone with the department. Barbara Baffin is being commissioned. One fiscal note, the Senate Bill 44 has been okay. The other one is a big discussion. That's the resolution. That should be a zero. I don't know what they're talking about.
Do we have any fiscal note on the...
We have the original, which was submitted when the bill was first taken up.
Which includes a rather hefty cost.
There was a, in fact, yeah. A very dramatic difference between Senator Couture's projections for operating expenses and the department's. The department testified last week that they didn't have much to go on and thought that their fiscal note would change now that they had a clearer picture of the intent of the legislation and what they wish to do with it. They also admitted that they made a mistake on the resolution and that that should have read zero. Nobody has, we have called frequently both to the third floor as well as the department and are told over and over they're on their way.
Thank you, Mr. Gifford. It appears that many of the concerns that the committee has discussed have been financial, and there may well be a good reason for moving the bill to the Finance Committee, because I think all of us agree on the desirability of a veterans home. At least in the comments that I've heard here, the questions again are largely financial, and we do have three members of the Finance Committee sitting on this committee that will have considerable knowledge of this bill should the committee see fit to go
we'll
forward
see about
with
that.
It. Are there any questions for the witnesses?
Mr. Chairman, on the just looking at the resolution, it's kind of a generic resolution. I guess what it does, Kathy, is it doesn't say it has to be in one specific part of the state. It's just pretty much a generic kind of resolution.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's exactly what it is. In fact, if that is the only thing that's holding up the package, is the lack of a fiscal note for the resolution.
In response to your question, no, that is not holding up the bill. There is a fiscal note, even though the department agrees that it should be zero. It can be passed out of committee with the existing fiscal note, the revised fiscal note catching up with the bill. Since we do have a fiscal note, we are not prohibited from passing the bill out. Are there any further questions for the witnesses? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mrs. Palmquist, would you like to testify on this bill?
Thank you.
Please join us.
Do I need to press something down here?
No, I do not. We are not on teleconference.
Thank you. I think you can hear me. My name is Rose Palmquist.
We've always been able to hear you very well.
I'm president of Older Persons Action Group. We have had on our agenda for a number of years the advocacy of a pioneer's home in Alaska. I'm sure that by now everyone knows that Alaska is one, I believe, of only two states that does not have a veterans home. And on the contrary, we are the, by population, the state with the most veterans in comparison, in ratio with general population. those veterans who are in need of those kinds of facilities are in the age group which we represent. As to the need for the $3 million or any other sum, I am not addressing that. I think that the state could pass this resolution and could work toward eventually having a pioneer's home without that type of money, and I think you're looking at that. We endorse the purpose of Senate Bill 44. We leave to you, the Senate, the fiscal bill, Senate Bill 45. I think that I would like to state further that the state is short of those types of homes, whether it's for veterans or other older people. We don't have enough pioneers' homes to accommodate those who are in need of some nursing oversight. We are not asking for more pioneers' homes. We believe that the state should look at other types of facilities, possibly that are more in line with federal requirements, so that we can tap into some federal money. Since veterans obviously is a national, more so than a local concern, and we believe that the national revenues should support such a home. However, we do think the state has an obligation to try to get one. That concludes my testimony, sir.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mrs. Palmquist? If there are no questions, thank you very much.
You bet.
With the exception of the fiscal work that must be done on this bill, Mrs. Bethany, please, you can join us. Do you have a revised fiscal note?
Yes, and they're getting it. I have my copy, which is unsigned by the commissioner.
And this is a revised fiscal note for the joint resolution?
The joint resolution, the commissioner, I made a new one for the joint resolution on Aubin Zero. He wouldn't sign it, he said. And the joint resolution, you don't need a fiscal note. So I'm in the right in the middle.
That's not right.
I do talk to that.
Who's this? Who said that, Commissioner?
Yes.
This is Mel.
The Commissioner, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but the Commissioner said he would not sign the fiscal note for SJR 9 because none was required.
Right.
I see. How interesting.
He's made your own fiscal note, I guess.
I understand that you work with the direction of the commissioner, and no editorial comment is expected from you, madam. Thank you, Senator Duncan.
Do you have an unsigned fiscal note for SJR 9?
Oh,
she can sign. She probably can't, but just chairman.
Sure.
Can you come? Absolutely. Can you come? A committee fiscal note.
I have the SB 44 fiscal note.
Also,
and that's the same as the commissioner has signed. Right now, they are calling and running over to get me the signed copy by the commissioner. It's in his office.
Mr.
Chairman. Senator Duncan.
I think Bonnie's in a tough position here. What I would suggest we do have fiscal notes on the two bills, right? Senate Bill 44 and 45. I mean, that's taken care of.
We actually have one on the resolution, too.
Yeah. I would suggest that we understand that there's fiscal concerns there, fiscal problems. We just move them forward. We can either move them forward with the fiscal note that's in SJR 9, or if there's a better fiscal note which you want to put together and sign as a committee chairman, we can do it that way. But it seems to me that we're really talking about fiscal impact, fiscal notes, and those always get changed as we go through the finance committee process. We can make that change upstairs.
I think your suggestion is a wise one. The matter is entirely fiscal. This isn't the finance committee as much as I might wish it to be. Realizing the limits therein, do you have a motion, Senator Duncan?
Yes. I guess you want them all separate, or can I make
yes,
one
sir.
Large one? All right. I would move SJR 9 from committee with the fiscal note that was first prepared on 2891, and that can be read and looked at.
Others to follow.
Right.
Any objection to the motion to pass SJR 9 from committee and the recommendations? Hearing no objection, the bill is passed from committee. Senator Duncan?
And also, I would move SB 44 to committee with the fiscal note of 2891, unless there is a more recent one signed by the commissioner on.
Yes, there is, Senator Duncan. The fiscal note you have is for SB 44.
Right.
Okay. It's two. Your motion encompasses
the new fiscal note.
Right. Mm-hmm. You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to passing SB 44 from committee with individual recommendations? Hearing none, the bill is passed and included individual recommendations. Senator Duncan?
And SB, I would move SB 45 as appropriation bill.
You've heard the motion. Is there any objection to the motion? Hearing no objection, SB 45 is passed from committee with individual recommendations.
Good work there, Senator Brody.
What is good work?
Next, I would like to take up Senate Bill 113, the Public Officers Compensation Commission. The I would like to call first Mr. Christensen of the court system. Please join us, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Charles Christensen. I'm the staff counsel to the Alaska court system. This is the second time I've testified on this bill today. The House State Affairs Committee heard the companion this morning, so hopefully you'll benefit from my learning curve. I'll try to keep my remarks brief. SB 113 was introduced by the Rules Committee at the request of the Supreme Court. This bill creates a Public Officers Compensation Commission with the authority to set the salaries of the governor, lieutenant governor, legislators, commissioners, and justices and judges of the court system. As you know, since 1986, we've had a State Officers Compensation Commission, which makes recommendations to the legislature on compensation levels for those officers. Alaska is one of approximately 27 jurisdictions, including the federal government, that operates some sort of a compensation commission. The purpose behind the creation of these commissions is pretty uniform from state to state. The goal is to have a body which can make fair decisions about the compensation of high-ranking government officials. It's believed by many that placing decisions in the hands of an independent commission makes it more likely that compensation and judgments will be dictated purely by their merits rather than by the political circumstances that face elected officials. Unfortunately, the purely advisory nature of the existing commission has prevented it from accomplishing this goal. Since 1986, the political problems surrounding the determination of appropriate levels of salary, per diem, and allowances for public officials have continued unabated. The Supreme Court believes that SB 113 would alleviate this problem. In proposing this particular solution, the court is primarily concerned about salaries of justices and judges. The Supreme Court, of course, wishes to attract and retain highly qualified jurists. This requires salaries that are commensurate with the qualifications and responsibilities of the office. Last session, for example, the legislature approved the first pay raise for judges and justices in 5 years. During the 18 months immediately preceding that pay raise, more than 20% of the judiciary resigned, most of them evidently because they felt that their salaries were slipping too much relative to attorneys in the private sector in Alaska. These arguments, of course, are equally applicable to legislative and executive branch service. I'd like to, Mr. Chairman, go through the bill quickly, hit the high points so that the committee is aware of what's in it, and I'd be happy to take questions. Sections 1 through 5 relate to amending statutes which provide that the salary of justices and judges shall be provided by law. This simply changes it to say that they will be provided by the Public Officers Compensation Commission. Section 6 makes the same change to the salary of legislators. It says it shall be established by the Public Officers Compensation Commission. Section 7 relates to additional allowances, saying that the commission may authorize an additional allowance for postage, stationery, stenographic services, and other expenses. This says may. The committee may wish to change that to shall. The amount would still be up to the discretion of the commission, but they would have to order it. I did note earlier today that there may be an error in the bill. The bill is intended to cover salary, per diem, and allowances. However, I noticed that the statute for legislative per diem has been left out. I think that might be an inadvertence on the part of the drafter. That's 2410-105. Committee staff may wish to check to see if that was an oversight or the drafter had some sort of specific intent.
Let me interject a question at this point. Was that included in the suggestions from the court system?
Mr. Chairman, my recollection is that it was, although, you know, legal services tends to tinker with drafts that they receive for reasons that are not always completely clear.
Mr. Chairman, so you're suggesting that has to be added back in?
Through the chair, Senator Ewing, I believe that it does, although it's conceivable that the drafter had some sort of a reason not to, but I believe that it does because that is the section of the current law that deals with per diem. Mm-hmm. And unless that is amended in some way, the commission won't have the power which other sections of the bill purport to give it. Section 9. In Section 10 relate to providing that the salaries of the governor and the lieutenant governor may be provided for by the commission rather than by law. Section 11 makes technical changes. Section 12 provides that the heads of each principal executive department shall have salaries established by the commission. The meat of the bill begins in Section 13. Section 13 establishes the Compensation Commission. The Compensation Commission tracks the existing salaries commission fairly closely. The major change, of course, is that it makes its recommendations mandatory rather than merely recommendations. There are a few changes that were made in the interest of making the bill perhaps a little better able to pass constitutional muster than the existing law is. And in making these changes, we were relying on comments made by the Attorney General to the governor when he was contemplating signing the original bill back in 1986. The existing law says that this commission is established in the office of the governor, and it's composed of members appointed by the governor who are confirmed by the legislature. Our understanding is that this sort of commission cannot have the members confirmed by the legislature. The Attorney General pointed that out to the governor back in 1986, but said that since it was a purely advisory body, it really didn't matter. Since this body is no longer advisory, it may matter to the governor. I realize that this is an important issue, and several legislative committees are having hearings on it right now, trying to determine the exact parameters of appointment. The existing law says that the seven members of the commission shall be composed of people from several different professions, public administration, labor, nonpartisan voters group, and a business executive. We've deleted these and added four different groups, someone from public administration, personnel management, one economist, and one attorney. These are purely arbitrary. The committee, of course, has it can, in its judgment, decide what sort of experience would be most valuable to the members of this particular committee. The commission will meet every other year at the call of the chair. It is supposed to issue its report during odd years. This means that the report will be issued and considered by the legislature during years in which there is not an election. This further serves to remove this process from the political realm. The commission is required to hold public hearings to discuss its findings before submitting its report and its order on compensation to the legislature. An order making changes to the compensation of a public officer becomes effective 60 days after submission or at the end of the legislative session, whichever is first, unless a bill disapproving the order in its entirety is enacted into law during that period of time. The question has arisen as to whether or not the legislature would still have it in its inherent authority to pass a law after that 60-day period relating to compensation, and the simple answer is yes. Of course, one legislature can't bind another. The only way you could completely remove the legislature's power to pass compensation laws would be to put this commission in the Constitution. So even after the 60 days, if it wished, someone could introduce a bill and the legislature could pass it, changing compensation. Section 16, orders are filed with the lieutenant governor. Section 17 is also a significant difference from existing law. The legislature has it within its authority to delegate its legislative power to other agencies within certain limits. And one of the limits is that the agency that is receiving this delegation of power has to have the power it is getting defined in some way. It has to know what standards under which it's supposed to operate. And as you can see, we have a laundry list of 12 different factors that the commission is supposed to consider when it decides what is an appropriate level of compensation. As I pointed, there are 27 jurisdictions that have compensation commissions. About 9 of those have commissions in which the commission actually has the authority to fix salaries. And 7 of those do it by constitutional amendment. 2 of them actually do it by law. One of those cases, Delaware, the courts have not considered the constitutionality of it. It's a fairly new law. The other is an older law in the state of Illinois, and the Illinois Supreme Court has upheld it. They say it's a legitimate delegation of authority, and this is, with some modifications, the laundry list that the Illinois Supreme Court has approved. And then finally, Section 18 defines compensation to mean salary, per diem, and allowances. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the members might have.
Well, that's my, Mr. Chairman, the question is, since we are putting that in the definition, then wouldn't that automatically be covered in the bill?
Through the chair, Senator Ewing, that might be the drafter's explanation. The problem is that the statute describing how per diem is, how it is calculated, it would still be on the books, and there may need to be some tinkering with that to make sure that it tracks completely. There may be an inconsistency.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, also, if this, you said something about the fact that everything was going to be done in odd years, odd numbered years. Does that, if this bill passed, became law by May or June or before that, would that allow this to be, take effect immediately, number one? And number two, could they start their work now for next, to be submitted to the next legislative session?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ewing, an order has to be submitted during the first 10 days of an odd year. So the next time an order could be submitted would be 1993. The commission could start its work now, but the order would not be submitted until 1993.
Let me ask a question, because Senator Duncan and I were talking about this before the committee meeting began. How do you feel about a constitutional amendment that would set up a commission with constitutional status to set salaries?
Mr. Chairman, in years past, there's been sort of an understanding that that's how a commission with real power had to be established. It's always been assumed. I've done some research, and I've learned that actually the AG has never issued an opinion saying that. Legal Service never issued a memorandum saying that. It's just sort of been everyone's common understanding. And after doing some research, we think that the common wisdom has been wrong, and it doesn't have to be done that way. The advantage of doing it this way is, of course, it's much easier to pass a bill than it is to get the two-thirds necessary to place an amendment on the ballot and then get a majority of the public to support it. And there have been, in years past, several occasions when constitutional amendments to do this were submitted and they never made it through the legislature for those reasons.
Are there... I have some preference for a constitutional amendment, notwithstanding its greater difficulty, because it further removes it from the political process, and I think the public will be far more understanding of the necessities in this area if the legislature and the executive, for that matter, have almost nothing to do with it and accept the results of the commission, and that's that. I think to the extent that there is legislative or even administrative interference, there will be a great deal of concern.
Mr. Chairman, I would note that while the court prefers doing it by statute, if it were done by constitutional amendment, there are other changes that could be made. For example, you would not have to require the appointments to be made by the governor. You could divvy up appointments among the House and the Senate, or you could require confirmation. So there are... the commission could be structured very differently if you did it by constitutional amendment, if that mattered to the members.
A proposed constitutional amendment wouldn't necessarily conflict with this. I understand your concern, and I completely agree with you from the court's perspective. They shouldn't have to be subjected to the process to which they have been subjected in the past. On the other hand, we're dealing with matters beyond the court system, and it might be worthwhile for this committee to consider the constitutional approach as well, because they would not be mutually exclusive. Would there be an objection from members of the committee if I introduced a committee bill that it would be essentially a restatement of bills that have been drafted in the past, a resolution that for us to consider in this matter that would provide for a constitutional amendment?
As a separate bill.
As a separate bill for us to consider it. We may wish to do nothing with it. We may wish to go forward with it.
I don't have a problem with that.
Without objection, then we'll draft a committee bill in that regard. Tardy.
Thank you.
bring this up in the meeting, I think.
Yeah.
Senator Bushell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the, I had a couple of questions that have been covered already. On the question of salary versus compensation versus per diem, I'm trying to read these parts together. The commission, in most of its duties, it talks about compensation recommendations, and most of the offices talk about compensation for the governor, lieutenant governor, superior court. But then when you get to legislators, it talks about salary, not compensation. And then if you read the definition, it seems like salary may not include per diem.
Mr. Chair, Senator Porchell, that's correct. The problem is that existing law refers to compensation for justices and judges and the governor and all, whereas the existing law breaks down legislative compensation into separate areas.
Yeah.
So rather than roll that all back into one statute, which is another possibility,
right,
the drafter simply rewrote the existing law and I think left one part of it out.
Yeah, I think there's a problem here that, you know, needs to be addressed. Yeah. I tend to agree with you. I think that something may have been deleted but really needs to be rolled into the definition of salary here, but because you don't want the operative sections the way they are now in operation. At the same time, you probably want legislative compensation addressed as a package of whatever, salary per diem or whatever, and that may not be happening under this scenario. The other thing, Mr. Chairman, on page 4, line 19, on the bill disapproving the order in its entirety. What was the rationale for in its entirety? The Compensation Commission is required to make all of its findings. So everybody's in, you know, all the officers, department heads are in one bill or in one submittal.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Porchell, I think I can't remember which one of the founding fathers said it, but he said we should all hang together, or more assuredly we'll all hang separately.
Benjamin Franklin.
Thank you. I think the point is that if all of these are rolled in and submitted as a package, there will be more support for the entire package. There won't be a sink or swim on each individually.
Well, I mean, it makes good sense. Chairman, makes good theory and makes maybe good politics. I'm not sure it's necessarily substantively true in each and every instance. I think there is an advantage from a substantive standpoint in not being able to pick and choose among the various compensations suggested for the governor or for a legislator or for the Supreme Court justice. You know, I disapprove of the per diem payments, but the salary is okay. I think that destroys the integrity of the whole recommendation. But there's no reason that we as legislators might not disagree considerably with the recommendation for legislative salary, which we are intimately familiar with, and go along with others. And I'm not sure why we would all want to hang together.
Mr. Chairman, of course, as I pointed out, after that 60 days, the legislature could still introduce legislation changing salary, and they could do that on an individual basis. So since this is done by statute rather than constitutional amendment, the legislature still does retain a considerable ability to do this individually if they chose to after the 60-day period. Someone could introduce a bill then changing the salary just of legislators.
If I could reiterate what I said earlier, I believe the only way that compensation will be acceptable for the legislature is for a disinterested group to make a study, set a figure, and we accept it, period. We have no options. There are none. We accept that figure, and that's it. I don't believe anything else will pass political muster. I don't think it will pass muster with my constituents, and that's why I favor a constitutional amendment to do that, because to the extent that we can or are involved in the process, the motives of the legislature will always be suspect, and until we can remove ourselves from that position, I don't think we'll have a reasonable solution to the problem. It doesn't affect the court system or other areas of government to nearly that extent. That's my feeling. everyone has different opinions. Yeah. Mr. Churchill.
I have a different opinion, which is one more premised on our responsibilities and authorities as legislators, which is we pass bills and we raise salaries or we don't raise salaries. And I'm not so much interested in insulation from that process. I fear what happened in the city of Anchorage, where a mayor gets a recommendation for a $30,000 or $40,000 increase in salary and can't not take it. There's no way of dealing with it, and I would hate to be in that situation. And I think that there is a time and place for the legislature to be able to turn down a pay raise. I mean, if in their collective wisdom, that's just not something that the man on the street's going to go for. And I think there is a burden set up here to do that, where, you know, passing a resolution disapproving is certainly the burden is always on the person trying to pass something. So I think this strikes that balance more, where you do have a say in what clearly under our state constitution is what was envisioned, that when we need a salary, and I know that's what you would propose changing, that we change the constitutional structure the way it is now, but it doesn't seem like, I mean, it's very uncomfortable, and sometimes we don't get paid for many years, but, I mean, raises, but if we want a raise, we can always pass a bill giving ourselves a raise. Which was done in 1983.
And which was repealed in 86.
Yeah.
Great thought. Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, I think this bill has some merit. I don't have any problem if you want to go ahead and do a constitutional amendment, if that's the direction that you want to go in. I kind of think, number one, this is one way of trying to handle the problem, unless it's got a legal problem when it's established. I think by doing it on odd numbered years, I think that puts it out until 1993. I mean, if there was a possibility of making it effective so that there was a way that they could start their work during the interim and then submit to the 92 legislature, I think that would be better. I used to think, I've always voted against every pay increase that we've ever had, but I do think, I'm beginning to believe more and more that it's difficult to live on a salary like that and still do other things, even though it's supposed to be a part-time legislature. One other comment I might make is that on the housing allowance, there should be some sort of a housing allowance that needs to be looked at, because we don't have any control over what prices are going to be in the Juneau in the case of housing when you come down here. It may be very short, maybe paying 20-30% more. You still have to maintain a house in another location. I think that makes it difficult.
Are there further questions for Mr. Christensen? Yes, please.
In regard to Senator Ewing's last point, in the list of factors which the commission is supposed to consider, number 6 is the reasonable expenses incurred in performing the public service, and number 10 is the geographic cost of living based on the public officer's primary place of assignment. So implicitly, the commission would be required, I think, to determine what it really costs a legislator to come to Juneau and to live here.
Are there further questions? If not, thank you very much, Mr. Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Next, I would like to call Ron Lorenzen from the Department of Law. Ron. I'm not sure what your exact title is, though. For all practical purposes, you're a managing partner of the state's largest law firm.
Well, my exact title these days is Assistant Attorney General, which is a title that I'll keep for another 10 days, at which point I'm going into private practice.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh, I'm not. I'll be joining the Birch Horton Bittner law firm here in town.
Very good firm.
Thank you. I'm here because I was asked by the governor's office yesterday to some legal and constitutional issue spotting, basically, on the bill. I don't really have any formal position on behalf of the Department of Law or formal legal opinions to express to you. I did prepare a note yesterday that may have been distributed to you, because I provided a copy of it to Mr. Gifford.
You want me to go ahead and distribute
it? I have no objection to that. The House committee had it available to them. I just identified three issues, basically, that I saw from looking at the bill. yesterday, basically. The first issue, one of the issues I think is not a problem. That's the third one that's listed in the, I don't see it as a problem anyway, that's listed in my note when you get it, and that is the question of whether or not this is an appropriate delegation of legislative authority. I think, and Mr. Christensen has addressed this as well, the kinds of standards, the number of standards, the specificity of the standards that are identified for the commission to take into account in setting salaries addresses what otherwise could be an excessive delegation of legislative authority to set salaries. So I don't really see that as a problem, but I do see it as an issue, and somebody may choose to raise it at some point if they wanted to challenge the legislation. And I guess I'll go in order of least problematic to most problematic, at least as I see it, which means that I'll talk about point number two next. And Mr. Christensen also addressed that. And I guess it just depends on how you read the bill or what you anticipate or expect to be coming out of the bill. And that has to do with a provision that talks about how one of these orders would take effect. Basically, it says that the order takes effect if it's not disapproved by the legislature through the enactment of a bill within 60 days. It may give some people the impression that that's it, that the legislature can't do anything else once that that compensation order takes effect. But under our system of the power of the legislature, in the absence of a constitutional amendment that provided for that kind of an effectiveness, sort of like we have with executive orders of the governor, there is no way to restrict the ability of another legislature from coming in and saying, no, even though this took effect after 60 days, we now disapprove it, or disapproving it in part. The legislature would retain ultimately the authority to change any of those salaries in the absence of a constitutional amendment that said the legislature does not have that power within its legislative power. So it's just a matter of how people interpret that provision. If people read that provision as meaning that compensation would be final and could not be touched by the legislature, I don't think that's the case. The legislature could touch it. I think Mr. Christensen agrees with me on that. The legislature could touch it. So really, I think what it's intended to do is more along the lines of say that it becomes effective in the absence of any further legislative action. It doesn't say it quite that way, but I think that's really what it comes down to. Or that would be the effect of this mechanism for making an order become effective. The third problem that I see, and again, it would be new ground in terms of what does the Constitution mean by the choice of words that are contained in a couple of provisions, both in the article that deals with the judiciary and the article that deals with the executive branch, but not in the article that deals with the legislature. There is a section that talks about compensation. And in both of those compensation sections, with respect to the executive branch, it's the governor and lieutenant governor's compensation shall be prescribed by law. With respect to the judiciary, it says the same thing. The compensation of judges shall be prescribed by law. I think there is an issue there, at least, as to whether or not prescribed by law means that the legislature must enact a number. Don't really know what it means, but I think that there is the potential for that becoming an issue if someone wishes to challenge this, that prescribed by law means the legislature must set the salary. The legislature can't delegate. In other words, because of those three words, there would be an argument that the legislature can't delegate, even though otherwise it might be able to, the power to set salaries for those public officials, governor, lieutenant governor, and judges. That argument, I don't think, does not apply to the legislature. The language with respect to compensation for the legislature is different. It just says that legislators shall receive an annual salary. It doesn't say how it's to be set. So those are really the three problems, potential legal issues, constitutional issues that I see with the bill. I know that from talking to Mr. Christensen and from his testimony before the House State Affairs Committee this morning that he has done some research beyond what I was able to raise yesterday on this prescribed by law language, and you may want to hear from him. I guess I could characterize his or summarize his testimony this morning as saying that based on his research, he has not found any case law that has said prescribed by law means it may only be done by statute. Courts have dealt with similar kinds of language, maybe not salaries, I don't know about that, but they have said as long as there is a legislative mechanism established which delegates that, which is a proper delegation of the authority to make whatever it is that's to be prescribed by law, the courts have upheld it. So ultimately, if it were to be litigated, it may not be a problem. It may also be less of a problem because if it were to be litigated, it would go to the Supreme Court, which has proposed this mechanism. just from a practical point of view, you know, it's another one that's difficult to call. I also had a recommendation that I just wanted to insert in this process if this proposal were to go ahead essentially in the form that it's in, and that would be to amend the bill just to require that these orders, once they become effective, be published in the state's administrative code as if they were a regulation, even though they would not be adopted under the regulation's adoption authority. I think it gives them more legal weight, and it also gives the public a place to go and look and see just what the salaries are that have been set. It's a place for these orders to be codified and found, basically.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bourgeau?
Does that mean if the Lieutenant Governor didn't sign the order, it wouldn't take effect?
Well, that's a real interesting issue. The way this is drafted kind of gets around that, because you'll see already, and I guess you would just want to be very careful with how that were drafted as well. If you look at Section 16, that calls for filing of these orders with the Lieutenant Governor. That doesn't, the way it's drafted, though, it doesn't call for the Lieutenant Governor to do anything. So as a result of that, you don't run into what otherwise may become an issue at some point. I understand the question. I'm not sure I have an answer.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Bourgeau.
On your next to the last point that you made on bylaw,
yes.
I guess I'm not real impressed with that concern because Senate Bill number 113 clearly is a law and there's a process set out. But from a practical standpoint, our compensation was altered much to our glee last summer during the special session. All of a sudden, we started getting compensation checks for $100 a day instead of $80 a day for being here in Juneau, and it was done with a stroke of a pen over DOA. Part of our compensation, and I suppose other people's, is in fact set through a process of per diem setting done through the Department of Administration.
Well, I think that's a good argument in favor of not construing this strictly. The reason I would, that I think there's a basis for construing it strictly is because if you go through the Constitution, the framers used enacted by law, according to law, prescribed by law, different phrases in different places, and you would, as a lawyer at least, you would impute a specific reason for choosing specific language in one place and not in another, and prescribed by law is a more constraining notion, I think, than according to law or as enacted by law. And that's why I'm concerned that because those words were chosen rather than something that just said according to law, that may indicate some intent on the part of the constitutional framers to require the legislature to actually do it itself. I don't know, but that argument is there.
Further questions from members of the committee? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next, I'd like to call Mike McMullen. Is that it? From the Department of Administration.
Thank you. My name is Mike McMullen. I'm the personnel manager in the Division of Personnel. I guess it's my dubious honor to represent the administration's position on the bill. I don't think you'll be surprised that the administration is not in favor of another commission receiving more authority. You've heard several instances with the governor's position on boards and commissions, and the same view applies to granting this one here. Position paper and fiscal note is in the process, and I apologize that they're not here in time for the meeting, but they will be here, and you'll see that same information in print. Besides the general attitude towards boards and commissions, the view of particularly my commissioner is that the legislative salary setting responsibility is that of the legislature. And I appreciate the dialogue between you, Senator Rohde, and Senator Bourgeau on that attitude, and the commissioner believes that the legislature should be the body to stand up and take the public scrutiny of adopting legislative salaries. And so in that regard, having the legislative salary set by an independent board and commission, he's opposed to that approach. We recognize that the intent of the legislation, because of the requester, is primarily to ensure that the judiciary gets properly paid so they maintain qualified jurists. And we're not opposed to a mechanism for dealing with those people. the same extent that we're opposed to a third party, a fourth party, making recommendations on legislative and executive branch salaries. And an idea which I ran across, that hasn't been floated by anyone, an approach encompassed in Chapter 47, Session Laws of 74, may be a mechanism that would deal with judiciary salaries only, and it had a formula for increasing salaries annually based on cost of living. That once it's enacted, would operate annually and not require a return to legislature in any sort of manner that the court has to come begging for pay increases for the judiciary. Just an idea that the committee we might look at and may find some mileage there. The fiscal note from the Department of Administration will be a zero fiscal note. The experience we've had with prior salary commissions is that if they indeed ask for assistance from us, it is very minimal assistance. We can take care of it normally with only a matter of weeks worth of work from one of our staff members, and therefore no additional appropriation would be required. I'd be happy to answer questions.
I don't have any questions other than just a comment. Is your commissioner aware of how his salary is set?
Yes.
How is the salary set?
This is in statute. It is the statutory rate is set to the salary schedule.
Do you know how the statutory rate is arrived at? We've delegated much of our power to set those rates in precisely this fashion. Many years past, the legislature would deal directly with rates, negotiations, and what have you. It was felt that that was unwise, time-consuming, and better left in a neutral forum. So various pieces of legislation were passed to provide a more even-handed business-like approach to the setting of the salary, such as the commissioners. But he doesn't, perhaps the commissioner would wish to change that process, and if so, I would invite him, of course, to submit some legislation to that effect. Since perhaps the commissioner would wish to set his own salary.
I will certainly pass that along.
How's it done?
I'm being facetious in a way, Mike, but we're trying to arrive at a rational solution, and my particular concern is the court system, and I'm pleased to hear that your comments there, because we do wish them out of the fray. Are there any other questions for Mr. Vlog? Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I had one more comment it's maybe just a comment to Mr. Christensen. I just read the letter from Mr. Snowden, and he talks about how it's somewhat difficult to keep members of the judicial branch, and you talk about the loss of members, then it's kind of, it is equally important to attract and retain highly qualified legislators and executive branch officials. And, of course, that applies to the people at this room, but the problem is we haven't figured out how to get rid of the unqualified legislators at the same salary. Maybe we could have differential salaries based on merit, merit promotion sort of thing. Because I know, you could introduce numbers of bills or bills passed.
Years of service.
Yeah.
We should get steps.
Educational attainment. There's no lack of varying schemes that might be proposed.
Probably work something that would satisfy everyone.
Mr. Chairman, I've been thinking about your remarks. Actually, your points are well taken, and I'm starting to think. I mean, we just include the people in the Me Too salary blocks, and the commissioners are arranged 30 or whatever, and then they step out with everybody else. And now I'm wondering, why are we including them in this? Why would we give them any special treatment? What is the rationale for including departmental heads and commissioners? Why not treat
money
them just
the
like
waters.
Directors and their range, just like we do now, range 30? And I don't know. I can see, clearly they're treated differently in the Constitution. or we have been treating them differently. But was there a particular rationale for including
them? Please rise.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Porchel, the existing State Officers Compensation Commission is charged with the with determining what's an appropriate rate of compensation for commissioners. We simply tracked it. I do note that in the majority of the 27 jurisdictions that have compensation commissions, commissioners or whatever the equivalent is in the particular state are included. Generally, constitutional officers are what is included, and commissioners are named in the Constitution.
So that it would be possible over time for your commissioners to get quite a bit different from, say, your deputy commissioners or your directors.
That's true.
Mr. Chairman, we had a salary commission that was established. I thought Ron Larson worked on it or something. What were the findings on that? That was a couple of years ago, and that all sort of fizzled out.
It's still there.
Oh, it's still there? Did they come up with a recommendation?
The existing?
Uh-huh. I mean, we've already done this once.
I just
in
think
the wrong
can,
manner, but I mean.
Re-approve the recommendation you made 2 years ago.
I have one copy of the State Officers Compensation Commission report. Which was issued in 89. I'll note that that the salary which the legislature enacted last year for justices and judges fairly closely tracked what the commission recommended. Let's see, executive branch. They did deal with commissioners. And not in any great detail, they compared their salary to the salaries of commissioners in other states. I think they did it simply because they were instructed to, not because they made any sort of a policy determination. I would note that in a lot of states, a number of commissioners are elected officials, too. That's something we don't do here, but in a lot of states, many of the commissioners are elected officers, and that may be why they're included elsewhere.
Mr. Chairman, following that, I'm not, no offense, I don't know if I heard a good reason. From what you said, I know that we did it before and we're tracking this, but I guess I still have that same question remaining, particularly since we do have them fairly well fixed in ranges. And, they may have a problem with it. I don't have a problem with them being range 30, and then they're in line with everybody else in their departments. And I don't know why we'd necessarily include them in this.
Mr. Chairman, if I may. The position of the Supreme Court is that as long as justices and judges are included, whatever else the legislature chooses to put in is just fine with them.
A very wise decision.
Well, I think you've already made some wise decisions in some of these other choices that you've made to include along with the justices. Mr. Chairman, I see that. I don't know. I see elected officials and the judges and being quite different than principal heads of principal departments.
Who wants a constitution?
I'm not sure that we have a broken system there.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know what your intentions are here. I think you got a couple issues you brought up. Number one, the constitutional question, which is a good one that you want to work on. Number two, you've got a bill before you on it. There's some technical changes that need to be made to it. Number three, you can take the option with the problem with legislative salaries, which is essentially just pass a bill that essentially, you know, raises it or does it something to it or takes a recommendation of the salary commission if it's sufficient and deal with it in that manner. Now, it doesn't take into consideration all the other heads of departments and everything else. This is a way of getting around you know, the real issue. I think Pat brought it out, Senator Porchel brought it out a couple times. If people aren't paid enough, then they should be compensated for it. You know, that's how I feel about it. Take responsibility for it.
Oh.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, that was my point.
And if we're going to do it, I think it has
not
to be,
the point
should
that.
Be taken into consideration this year. Also, I might add, Mr. Chairman, that if you wait, as long as you're talking about waiting on this odd number of years, you're not going to get any kind of resolution on it for two more years. 1993.
What I'd like to do is make two corrections in the bill at this time. One, the the per diem oversight. Two, Mr. Lorenzen's suggestion, which I think is a wise one, of making sure that the findings are published pursuant to law. think that was an oversight on our part. Allow members to think on the bill. I know it. I know it's a topic that has been around and perhaps will be around. But certainly, ourselves aside, it is important, particularly for the judiciary. I would like to no strong feelings with regard to ourselves. I would like to ensure that there is a stable system for the judiciary. One can argue their position from merit based on their selection process and attainment. Perhaps one would be less successful in arguing that for the legislature as a whole. Are there any further comments from members of the committee? I will bring this bill back up before us at our next meeting. Committee is adjourned.